Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Enlightened Empaths, your community for the spiritually awakened, where we discuss, explore, and connect with fellow empaths, healers, intuitives, and seekers. Hello, empaths. We're so happy to be joining you. We're continuing our discussion on healing the inner child, which is such a heavy topic. How are you feeling, Denise? You ready to dive into this heaviness again this week?
I am, because after we recorded the last show, it really does get you reflecting about how much you've already done and how this can be a process throughout our lifetime. And you might see the end, you might not, but everything that we do to work in this direction of healing that inner child benefits what I feel is every aspect of our life.
Yes, I agree. And like you were saying in the first show, how it echoes into past and future generations, which is so, so crucial.
Yes. And maybe at this time of this shift in consciousness that so many of us are experiencing, this is why it's so necessary to do this work and why we're having such a strong need to release it all, is that we agreed, okay, we'll come in, we'll do it right before this age of consciousness, and we'll clear the slate for new beginnings. There's the optimist in me.
There you go. I love it. Well, I think part of healing the inner child, and I think we said this a little bit in the first show, is really learning to look at your parents, your caregivers, whoever inflicted some pain and difficulty on you in your childhood, looking at them as people rather than the label we assigned them, whether it was parent, caregiver, teacher, bully, whatever it is, but trying to take a step back and looking at them as a person who's carrying their own pain. Don't you think that's important?
I think it's really important, especially if we look at this, doing this work. The whole point of it is often to try to create the safety and security that our younger selves may not have felt that they received or they didn't receive. But it also, when you start doing this, it allows you to unlock your natural gifts, that curiosity, and our real capacity of how much love we're able to give and receive. And if we stop identifying with the labels of other people and how that could or should or did impact us, and we instead look at ourselves, it changes the whole game.
It definitely does. One of the things Bradshaw talks a lot about in his book, Homecoming, is how often the narcissist in your life is a sign that that person has an unhealed inner child in them. And that makes sense, doesn't it?
Yes, I think so.
He has a story. He says he often jokes to his colleagues that if he walked out of his office on fire, at least three patients in the waiting room would say to him, "Have you got a minute, Dr. Bradshaw?" But he says that every child needs to be loved unconditionally, at least at the very beginning. Without the mirroring eyes of a non-judgmental parent or caretaker, a child has no way of knowing who they are. Every one of us was a we before we became an I. We needed to know that we mattered, that we were taken seriously, and that every part of us was lovable and acceptable. We also needed to know that our caretaker's love could be depended on. These were our healthy narcissistic needs. If we did not get them met, our sense of I am was damaged. I thought that was really important because there are healthy narcissistic needs that we have. And sometimes, especially empaths, can look at any need that they have as selfish. Have you noticed that?
Very much so. That's a really, really important point.
Now, he says, if these needs aren't met ever, and you don't work to heal them, then you can grow up to be a narcissistic adult. And I think this is important to recognize if we're going to look at the people from our childhood with a little bit of non-judgment and just an observer's eye. He says the narcissistically deprived inner child contaminates the adult with an insatiable craving for love, attention, and affection. The child's demands will sabotage adult relationships because no matter how much love is forthcoming, it is never enough. The narcissistic adult can never get their needs filled because their wounded inner child needs love and attention all the time, just like a newborn baby does. He says they are needy by nature, not by choice. When these needs aren't met, several things can happen. They can be disappointed in their relationships, find themselves always looking for the perfect partner. They can become addicts. He says addictions are an attempt to fill the hole in one's psyche. They can crave material things and money to give them a sense of worth. They might become performers like actors or athletes to obtain continuous adoration. Or they can use their own children to meet their narcissistic needs. So, for example, they might try to live out their dreams through their children or rely on their children to love and admire them. Or become enmeshed. Haven't you seen families who do that, who just cling to each other?
Right, to the exclusion of any other relationships outside of that unit, yes.
Yeah, I worked with someone years ago who, her family of origin had a rule that they, all of them, all the brothers and sisters in that family and the parents, always had to live in the same town.
Wow. Not by choice?
No, that was just the rule the parents set. And I remember one of the siblings got a fantastic job offer across the country and they had to turn it down because it went against that family rule. Can you imagine?
Well, I've known a lot of people who have struggled because they were the person who chose to leave or chose to move away from where the rest of the family lived. And that's another whole dynamic because many, many have said that they always felt like it was that they were somehow letting their family down or that they were the black sheep or that they were the one who, and there's some issues with that sometimes.
Yeah, there definitely can be. I think sometimes situations are so unhealthy, that's your only choice.
Right.
But I think other times it's a form of running away from a problem. What's the old Zen saying? Wherever you go, there you are.
Yeah, those damn geographicals, they follow you, don't they?
They sure do. Now, he has a whole section on the book on toxic shame that was really, really heavy and deep. He says that any abuse endured in childhood, whether it's physical, sexual, or emotional, creates toxic shame. And he defines this as the feeling of being flawed and diminished and never measuring up. Toxic shame feels much worse than guilt. With guilt, you've done something wrong, but you can repair that. You can do something about it. With toxic shame, there's something wrong with you, and there's nothing you can do about it. You are inadequate and defective. Toxic shame is at the core of the wounded child. And he says, once toxically shamed, a person loses contact with their authentic self. What follows is a chronic mourning for the lost self. When you are raised by adult children, these parents resent your neediness and they shame you for it. And so what results is that you internalize that and continue to shame yourself for having needs.
Wow.
I wonder if that's why some, like the control issues or the independence or the cognitive, the overthinking, I wonder if that results from all of that so that you can prevent being needy. I don't know.
What's running through my mind now is you've been brought this up in a lot of different episodes we've done, that if you have one consistent, strong parent, that can make the world of difference. And that's from a therapeutic standpoint, from research, from, you know, psychology, all of those things. But in circumstances where you may not know the impact another parent or caretaker has had on your child. Because when we were getting ready to record these shows, we talked about our own stuff, but we also talked about, you know, you always wonder, is that why my child does this? Or is there something there? So, you know, you have to wonder where you can't, if you're concerned that you've shared these traits with someone that you've given birth to or that you've been a caretaker for, it may not be from you.
That's so, so true. What's that quote Roseanne Barr has? Like, I think she said something like, I don't have a college fund for my kids. I have a therapy fund for them. But check this out. He says that when you have toxic shame, we tend to numb our feelings through a variety of different ego defenses. So I'd like for people to listen to this and see if you resonate with any of these ego defenses. One of them is denial, meaning this isn't really happening, or repression, that never happened, disassociation, I don't remember that happening, projection, it's happening to you, not me, or conversion, meaning I eat or have sex or drink when I feel this emotion, or minimizing, it happened, but it's no big deal.
And just thinking about how you've shared that you and your sisters perceived different situations in your life from when you were kids, and birth order and all the things we mentioned in the last episode. But each of those things you just mentioned could be a different coping mechanism depending on where you were in the family and how it impacted you.
Oh, interesting. Like oldest, middle, youngest.
Yeah.
And timing too, because, you know, you can be raised in the same family, like you were saying last week, with the same genetics and all of that, and yet completely different people. And I think that does have to do with genetics. I think that does have to do with birth order, but I also think it has to do with the timing, right? Yes. Like your parents are different people with the first child. They're young, they're new to this, and they're completely different people with the last child.
Yes. And also when you, if we want to make a little, throw a little woo into it, what life plan, what contracts were made in those families of what would be played out for growth and evolution? So that's another whole aspect to throw into the mix.
Well, I think that's an important aspect because I always like to pull the positive out of a situation. And so in addition to looking at your parents or caregivers as people rather than, you know, these labels, I think it's also important to reflect on what you learned from your childhood. What positive strengths were you able to cultivate from the difficulties you might have gone through?
Because it can be resiliency, kindness, compassion, humor. I mean, there are a lot of really incredible things that can come out of this as well.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so let's get into the nitty-gritty of reclaiming your inner child. Where do you think people need to start?
Well, I think you already nailed it beautifully by acknowledging that there's even something to look at. That's the number one thing.
Yeah.
And a lot of things are there. They talk about getting back through meditation, through breath work, through mindfulness, connecting with deep breathing in your physical body to kind of shut off that stress of the adult world and that fight or flight arousal feeling so that we can be more present in our body. So I think getting more connected with your own inner self through breath work, through meditation, through getting in touch with your five senses can be a huge, huge way to begin to reconnect with that inner child of, you know, your sensory. Because think about little children, they are incredibly sensory. Everything, all of their senses are completely open, you know, and even if they may have an impairment or a lack of strength in one area or another, they're still very sensory people. More sensory than I think we all try to get back to that throughout life, don't you?
Yeah, I do. Well, not everyone. I do think that people who are oblivious to their wounded inner child tend to respond to life by being chronically busy. And I think busy is a trauma response. And so I agree with you that it starts with going within through meditation, silence, breath work, but just allowing yourself to be alone and calm and still with yourself. That can be really hard for some people. Go to a yoga class. I can't tell you anytime I'm in yoga, the last 5 to 10 minutes, you're always in Shavasana, corpse pose, which is where you just lay still and you don't move or think. You just lay there. And every week there are so many people who are rolling up their mats and rushing out of there. And it's almost done with a vengeance. Like, no, I will not be still. You ever know people like that?
Yes.
I think that's often a sign that you've got some inner work to do, which is fine, which is totally fine. There's no shame in any of this. We all have shit we're working out, you know? I think the key is just being honest with yourself and recognizing it. Now, something Bradshaw says in Reclaiming Your Inner Child is that it starts with grief. Isn't that fun? What a fun couple of shows we're presenting to everyone. But he says over and over again, the first thing you need to do is allow yourself to grieve. And he says, this is the original pain work, and it demands that we re-experience what we could not experience when we lost our parents, our childhood, and most of all, our sense of I am-ness. The spiritual wound can be healed, but it must be done by grieving, and that is painful.
It is very painful.
Yeah.
Well, I just think this, it's not easy to look at why we may do things that we know are not healthy for us. Why do I reach for that extra cookie? Or why do I take the extra drink? Or why do I compulsively work out because I'm not connected with my physical body? Or, I mean, make your choice of which way you're coping with it. And I think that confronting those defenses that that have just been a part of who we are for so long, that's big work. And it is uncomfortable, and it is grieving.
Yeah, it is. It is grieving, and it's uncomfortable, and it's hard. And yet, I do think it's imperative. And sometimes it'll come out when you're not even expecting it. I remember one time years ago when, again, I felt like every time I feel like I've healed a part of anything inside of me, usually something will happen where the universe is like, you're not done, you know, get back to that meditation mat. And I was just out shopping. I was having a lovely time all by myself, just getting some errands done. And I saw a woman about my age with her mom, and they were having so much fun. And they were laughing hysterically over something they found in the housewares aisle. And I just started to cry right there in the middle of Home Goods, because I realized I would never have that moment with my mom. And it made me sad. And I had to, you know, put my little candle down or whatever I had grabbed and leave the store and go cry in my car. But it was, it was very, very instructive, because I realized something important, that we have to grieve the loss of a parent, whether it's a physical loss or an emotional loss or a spiritual loss, at different stages of our life. None of this is a one and done process.
Wonderful, though, that you could cry and release that and have that moment of healing, as painful as it was.
Yeah, I think it's all, you know, it's all good. It's all good in the end. It doesn't feel good in the moment. Bradshaw says that at first you'll feel shock, and then depression, and then denial. And after this comes anger, and then hurt, and then sadness, followed by remorse and loneliness. All right, Denise, if this were like a course description and they were like, in this class, Reclaiming Your Inner Child, at first you'll feel shock and then depression. I'd be like, yeah, no, I think I'm going to go with the art class. And yet he says, however painful and awful this sounds, we must feel all of these feelings. He reminds us again and again that healing is a process, not an event. And it's a pendulum. So you will swing from feeling sadness and shock to minimizing the memories and associated feelings before swinging back to sadness. As long as you remain present for yourself throughout this healing journey, you will be doing the healing work.
And this the starting point for this might be asking yourself some really simple questions of, are you discounting or minimizing some really difficult and traumatic stuff that happened in your childhood and not giving it the credence that it deserves? Or are you making what was really pretty messed up just normal? Oh, that's just the way it was. So that those are those initial denial things, or being the eye openers of, oh, there is something here I need to look at. We brought this up in the last episode. Do you feel a need to protect those people who cared for you out of either embarrassment or honor or guilt? Or do you just think, I'm too far gone and it's not going to matter anyway? But those can all be precursors to starting to step into these. And I think it's like any process of grief, that it doesn't, yes, you're going to go through all those stages, but I feel like it skips around, don't you? That you're in a place of denial, then you're in a place of sadness, then you're in a place of, but it's not necessarily a linear, clean path.
No, definitely not. And that is okay. And you made a great point about some people might think, oh, it's too late for me, or it's too late for this, or I'm too old to deal with this. That is not true. I had a client for years. She started coming to me when she was 89 or 90, and she would come every 6 months. And the only thing she wanted to know is, when am I going to die? When am I going to die? When am I going to go meet Jesus? That was her big question. And I don't answer those questions, right? That's not for me to know. That's only for God or your higher power to know. And so I would tell her that super honestly. And yet she kept coming back and asking me that question. And so finally, I don't know, the fourth or fifth time, I was like, all right, I gotta dig into this. And it turned out that, you know, she hadn't been a super amazing mother, and she needed to apologize to her surviving son.
Wow.
And she did not want to hear that. And she was mad. And I did not see her for about a year, year and a half. And then she came back to see me and was very thankful that it did really, really help. And she passed soon after that.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. I do not think it is ever too late for us to heal, to ask for forgiveness, to give forgiveness, to forgive ourselves, to work on to love ourselves. There's never too late for that.
No. And, you know, another technique is to make a childhood timeline, and from birth to 21 or birth to 18, and go through and, did your parents get divorced, and say, oh, age 5, my parents got divorced, or, you know, this happened when I was 8, or there was a horrific, just kind of, but what I find is, many people have blocks where they don't remember big chunks of their childhood. It's just not there. And it's not because they just don't remember it. So that could be a difficult thing. But if you do have some key things, that could be an indicator to go back and revisit. Okay, so that's where that started. Oh, and I started drinking when I was this age, or I started to, you know, whatever your coping mechanism may have become, it started somewhere. And sometimes going back and looking at that childhood timeline can be really helpful in as a starting point.
You know, one of the things my sisters and I did in our 20s and 30s a lot, when we would get together and the kids would go to bed, we would just pour a glass of wine and share stories. And we did that for years. And eventually we got to a point where we were like, okay, I think we've healed all this. We've gotten it all out. Now let's just spend time together, you know, and not talk about this. But for years we did that. And we still talk about it today, how healing it was, how helpful it was to be able to fill in those missing pieces too.
Right.
So again, I'm a big fan of talking and sharing if you're able to do so. I'm also a big fan of just sitting with the memories. Like you were saying, if you write your outline and you realize there's big chunks you don't remember, I think the more you work with this, memories will start to surface.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. Bradshaw talks about 4 main stages of development in our childhood, and that's infancy, toddler stage, preschool stage, and school age stage. are the four main stages where this inner child is born. And that's where you need to start. And so he has a lot of different things you can do. And some of them, I think I told you before we hit record, they just make me tired thinking about them. Like one of the things he says is write letters to yourself at these four different stages. So write a letter to your infant self, your toddler self, and so on. But then write a letter to your adult self from your infant self, from your toddler self. Do you think he would do that?
No, but I have a friend who went and got an MFA and did a lot, had a very, very traumatic childhood from infancy, just a lot, and did a lot of artwork and a lot of writing and a lot of installation pieces that were reflective of that inner child healing. So this can, you can find ways to work through this. And I spoke with her recently and we were talking about some of the pieces that she did and how it connected with releasing that childhood trauma. So it can be, you can work through this in ways that are not traditional. And I think that's important. But it, my point being, when she was doing the work, it was bringing back some memories that had been buried for a very long time that she hadn't remembered. So yeah. The more, when you start doing the healing, and it, from personal experience, when you start doing the healing, it gives you more of a perspective of how strong you really are and how much work you've really done over the years.
Yes. So that you can pat yourself on the back and start to love that little child.
Yes.
And I think, for me anyway, I think you should start with where you're comfortable. So as we established last week, I guess I have a thinking addiction. And you and I were saying how we love to think and research and process. But if that's our safety comfort zone, I mean, what helped me a lot start to heal my inner child was reading and researching it. So I read so many books, Daughters of Mothers Who Can't Love, The Emotionally Immature Parent, The Body Never Lies, The Body Keeps Score. I mean, I've read so many books on all of this, and they've all helped me tremendously. So I think it's okay to start with where you're, even though Bradshaw would say, you're still in your head, Samantha. Well, my head helped me. So I started there. From there, what I did was I created a collage and I put a picture of myself as a little, well, I put several pictures of myself as a little girl in different stages on this little poster board. And then I surrounded it with pictures and words and images of things I felt she needed to hear back then.
Oh, that's a wonderful activity.
It was really good. And I hung it up in my closet so that it would be private. You know, I didn't want my kids to be like, Mommy, what is that you? Like, what? You know, I didn't want to be like, Mommy's healing her inner child right now, girls. I hung it up. I taped it to the wall of my closet. And then every morning when I was getting dressed or every night when I was putting on my pajamas, I would just, you know, send her love. And I would read those words and those, and look at those images that I felt she needed to hear as a little kid. And that helped me a lot. But again, I like doing artistic, creative stuff. So I think you have to start with what's comfortable to you.
Yes.
And then move from there because, okay, I want to ask you what you think about something Bradshaw stresses in his book. He says, in order to heal our toxically shamed emotions, we have to come out of hiding and trust someone. Now, he says this person you should start with is you. Like, you got to start by trusting you. And he has a quote from Joe Cordat that says, of all the people you will ever know, you are the only one you will never leave or lose. So he says to start there. But then he says you need to start with a trusted friend or a therapist and start to share all these toxically shamed emotions. What do you think about that?
Ooh, that's a hard one. I do think trusting yourself is the first step, 100%, because if you can't trust yourself, then I agree with that. How could you possibly even know what it felt like to trust someone else? for people who may not have had good luck with sharing, I think there might be baby steps to go in that direction. I do think you need to find a way to give voice to it.
Yeah, I do too. And I think you have to, you know, just find someone that you trust. And it's okay to interview therapists. I don't think people talk about that enough. If you go to someone and you don't really jive with them after the first visit, don't go back.
Right.
But I do think it's a good idea to find someone that you can process this with, especially if you're calling up deep-seated stuff that you've been pushing down for a while. And they'll validate you and they'll help you express it and they'll hold your hand and they'll hold a safe space for you through it. One of the things my therapist had me do when I was working on healing my inner child was write down memories from my childhood. So he created a chart and it said memories from your childhood. And then the middle column was how you felt about it then. And then the third one was how you feel about it now. And then the fourth one was lessons learned. And that was so instructive to look at how I felt about a certain memory as a child and how I feel about it now, because very often they are different. And he said, if you have a memory and you feel the same way about it then that you do now, that's usually an indication that that's an issue you got to work on and release and heal.
Well, and that makes perfect sense, because when people get stuck on that loop tape of this happened and there's no way out of it, or this, and they're not able to get any distance from it or see it from another viewpoint, then it's just going around that same circle over and over and over again. And I think another, probably the biggest part in all of this is you were a child. You were a little person. You did not have the resources or the ability or anything to do that. So feeling bad about it or holding that, you didn't do anything wrong. You were there. And I mean, you think about brain chemistry and, you know, abstract thought doesn't even come in until 7, 8, 9 years old, depending. So you were so vulnerable. And then to have that all ripped away and then to listen to this and say, well, you need to learn to be vulnerable again. That's asking a lot. And I know we can do it and we can find those trusted people. But one part, and I don't know if Bradshaw mentioned this or not, is we're talking about the situations that we can identify. So you had a toxic parent or you had a situation. But for some, there's also that you have to deal with, why didn't the other person step in and do something about it when they witnessed it?
That's a tough one, right?
That's a really tough one, because I think you're getting the double whammy with that one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think adult children or whatever we want to call that have a harder time with that caregiver than the other one, the one who was permissive and didn't step in.
Right. And they may not notice it until this work is done. And they say, oh, a lot of this anger or resentment I thought was directed at this is actually based on, it comes back to codependence in a weird sort of way. Because you're still trying to make it okay for everyone. And you're.
Yeah. I see that. You're right.
You know, when you, and it, as one of our favorite topics is learning to set those internal boundaries, because that's what this work allows you to do, is to truly set the internal boundaries of, you know, that having control can be a good thing sometimes. And when you start to be in control of your emotions and not reactive, and you're able to be honest and vulnerable with yourself, or you're able to find a therapist that's going to help you on your path, or you start to find gratitude in life rather than fear, resentment, anger, or shame, because that's you taking your control back and saying, I'm okay just the way I am.
Such a good point. Now, Bradshaw does have some positive things that we can do. You ready for some positive ones?
But some positives would be great.
He says to find what he calls security anchors, where you think of times in your childhood when you felt safe and secure. And I think that's a great exercise to do so that you're not just focused on all the negative and what you didn't get, but think about some of the wonderful things, some of the other caregivers who stepped in for you, some of the wonderful teachers you may have had, or great friends, or wonderful memories with the parent you have the most issue with. There's one or two, or hopefully more. So he calls these security anchors and says that they will help you on your healing process. And he also says that as an adult, we should search for alternative mother-father figures.
Hmm.
Yeah, I that was my response too, Denise. Kind of like, is that really helpful? I don't know. Why did you go,
Because I think that is, yes, I think we do that without realizing it sometimes. Sometimes it's not as deliberate as we might think it is. And someone will start to play that role in our life, either as a trusted friend or an older person in our life that they'll help us learn to foster the trust we may not have felt with our family of origin.
Yes. Yeah, I do think that can be good. And it can help us to have a little bit of that nurturing. I just wouldn't want us to rely on an alternate mother-father figure.
Right, because you're just transferring. You don't want to do that.
Yeah, exactly. He also says to create new rules and to tell yourself that you have the right to talk about and share your experiences. You have the right to want things for yourself. And you have the right to play and have fun.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, that's nice. And that's important, especially if you were made to be a sort of parent in your childhood. I think reminding yourself that you have the right to play and have fun is going to be really, really important. Then he says you need to release the false role you were given as a child. Ooh, I think that's a big one. That's a hard one.
That's a very hard one.
Yeah. I mean, if you were the smart one in the family, if you were the athlete, if you were the rebel, if you were whatever, to release that can take a lot of time. But it's important because it's how you're going to unmask your false self and reclaim your authentic true self. And he also talks a lot about how it's okay and important to find and create a new family. So whether that's the family that you create with your partner or whether that's the family you create with your trusted friends, but having that sense of my OG, my family of origin, but also this family that I've created that I love and trust and they love and trust me, that's really, really important on your healing process.
Because we're wired the way we are, and we just see things from a lot of different ways, you have to wonder if those people that we do feel that bond with, that we connect with, that we help each other heal through family situations, or the beginning of our lives might have started out one way and then we make choices to say, I'm going to take things in a different direction now with these people who see me for who I am. That's big work to come in to do with folks too. And I think it's equally as important as family of origin stuff is the people that are near and dear in our lives that help us heal and grow and evolve.
Yeah, 100%. Something else he talks about, and I'd love your opinion on this or your thoughts. He has a lot of information about how important it is to connect with your higher power. And he says it doesn't have to be your traditional view of God, but you do have to believe in something bigger than all of us and connect with that as part of your healing journey. What do you think about that?
I do. I agree with that. And I think that may vary depending on who you are. You may find that solace and comfort in organized religion. You may find it in alternative spirituality. You may find it in, being an intuitive and a medium. You may find that in your connection with nature. But it's all something more outside of yourself to connect to.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I think that's key. I mean, it's part of AA is having that sense of a higher power, whatever that is. I think it's part of any healing journey we choose to go on.
Do you think that you could even have that be, your higher self?
Yes. Yes, definitely. Definitely. But I think getting in touch with with the idea that there is something bigger than all of us, that there is something out there that is loving us and watching over us, and not having to put a label on that, but just trusting that there is something out there. I can't tell you how helpful that's been to me, knowing that I have angels and guides and, you know, and for me with my background, knowing I have saints and Mother Mary watching over me has been incredibly comforting. And the amount of signs and validation I've gotten from that, it's just been a beautiful part of my healing journey. I'm so grateful for it.
I can't imagine not having it.
No. Now, in tandem with me talking about saints and guides and angels, he also says that we have to confront our magical expectations. And he talks about how kids always have these magical expectations, right? Like, if your dad left you, he's going to come back and take me to Disney and everything's going to be perfect. Or, I don't know, if your parent is totally debilitated with a drug addiction, they're going to sober up and everything's going to be perfectly fine. He said, if you have an unhealed inner child within you, you still have magical expectations as an adult. So you think like, oh, if I make this much money a year, everything's going to be great. If I lose this many pounds, everything's going to be perfect. You know, those types of magical, like, if I just do this, if I can just get that brass ring or that carrot, everything's going to be magically healed.
Right.
Says we have to recognize those expectations in our life today and heal them.
Because if not, you're still chasing the elusive.
Yeah, exactly. And also, I think it's something I really feel strongly about. I just don't think happiness should be our goal. I don't think we're here on this earth to be happy. I think we're here to experience happiness, but I don't think that should be the end all goal. I don't think we're here to be successful. I don't think we're here to make a shit ton of money. I think we're here to have all the experiences. And I think when you switch your view from that magical happy ever after viewpoint that we're kind of culturally soaked and marinated in our whole life, right? Starting with fairy tales and Disney movies. When you switch that expectation to one of, oh, my goal is to learn and grow and heal and really cultivate the gifts that have been given to me by my higher power and use them to make my little corner of the world a little bit better and brighter. I think when you shift from that to that, it does help you. I think it does help you to be happier, but I think it also helps you to recognize the beauty of each moment, whether it is a painful one or a happy one. It's all beautiful.
It is. And you made a good point about the creativity, because when you start to nurture your creativity, whether it's through drawing or cooking or gardening, or you like to sit and read graphic novels, or when you start to do things that you enjoy, it's centering and it takes us back to that inner child. It takes us back to that little happy place, because it's something that's all ours. And it doesn't really matter what it is, but it's making the time and taking the time to gift yourself with. And if you're really busy and you're in that place in your life where I don't have 5 minutes to myself, then take two of those minutes and do something for yourself. Because or listen to a podcast when you're driving to work, or look through a magazine, or just do something that's going to feed that creativity and that curiosity again.
Yeah, and go easy on yourself with that too. You know, at the beginning of the new year, I was joking to my kids. I think I joked to you too. I was like, gosh, if I do everything I am resolving to do, I'm going to have no time to actually work or eat. Right? Like if you make time every day to journal and paint and play and meditate and go to the gym, that's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so I switched it from every day to every week. Right? So like, I know for me, going to the gym is real. I need to go pretty much every day, even if it's just 30, 40 minutes, just because it really helps to set my energy and tone and mood for the day. So, you know, that's a given. I have to meditate every day. That's a given. But the other things I want to do, like journaling more, or just getting back to my creative side more. I might not have time for that every day, but I do have time for that each week. And that helps a lot too. So again, all of this that we're talking about is on a spectrum. None of this is a one and done. None of this is, we're not saying you have to feel all these feelings today or, you know, right now, but we're just saying, give yourself permission to feel these feelings. And in tandem with that, give yourself permission to be more childlike, to be more playful, to go easy on yourself. And it doesn't have to be all in one day or even all in one year, but just set it as an intention and you will start to work towards it.
Exactly. And for me, it is the journaling every day. And I said that to a dear friend this morning. We were talking and I said, I'm just so glad I can write myself off the cliff. It doesn't matter how I start when I wake up in the morning, I can talk myself through it. So I think for you, you're saying you get that from the gym, from meditation. So there's no right or wrong way to do this. There's something, find something that it becomes that non-negotiable in your life that you feel better doing it. Because that's all we're trying to do with all this inner child work is we want to feel better. We want to have a higher quality of life. We don't want to dredge this shit over into the next lifetime and say, oh, son of a bitch, why didn't I deal with that last time? But we've chatted about this is how I think for me and for many people I've spoken with, if when you are walking along and you find, you see it like a little rock or a feather or a pine cone or something, it's like, oh my God, that's so beautiful. And you get that surge of joy at finding a little treasure. That it can be that simple.
Oh yeah, it can be that simple. And I think when you are focused on these non-negotiables, like you were just talking about, that's a form of setting boundaries.
Yes.
And I think that's really important. You're setting a boundary with yourself and with others where you're saying, this is sacred to me and I'm going to make time for this. That sends out a ripple of energy into the universe that's going to echo back to you that you matter, that your time matters, that you're important, and that your goals have validity. And so I think when we set those non-negotiables, yes, we're working on healing ourselves, but we're also really priming the pump for even more joyous occasions to come into our lives as we learn to set boundaries.
And you're fostering that trust of, I trust myself to show up and do this because I know it's going to help me.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, definitely. So this is definitely a process and it does take time, but I can't think of really anything more important than to work on loving yourself and healing yourself.
Yeah, because reparenting is such a strong word, but even think about the way that some of the things that you might say to yourself and try rewording that in a nurturing way that you would say that to a small person rather than your younger self, your inner child, rather than those rote responses. Oh, what the hell was I thinking? Would you say that to a little kid? Would you say, what the hell are you thinking? No, you wouldn't say it that way. You'd find, well, maybe we should try this a different way, or I can see you put a lot into that. You know, you brought up looking at photos of yourself when you were a little person, when you were a child, and telling that little, what did they really need to hear? What was going on for them? And, you know, there are traditional methods of therapy that can really help you do this. And there's a lot that you can do on your own. Internal family systems is a form of therapy that focuses on different parts of just being a human being, you know, and every younger part of ourselves is working to protect the individual as a whole. Depending on where you are on your life path, you might have a little more to undredge, or you might have already done a lot of the work and you've reached a place of acceptance with it.
Yeah.
It's all good.
It's all good and it's all okay and it's all a part of the process. Sometimes just recognizing that there's healing to be done is the first step. Just recognizing that there's something to be healed, recognizing your triggers, learning to have that time for solitude and inner reflection, all of that is part of the healing. Okay, so you might not want to sit down and write a letter to your infant self. That's okay. But you might want to spend a rainy Saturday afternoon painting and working on a puzzle for no point except the joy of sitting in that moment. And that's good too. You have to start with where you are and what you're ready for in this moment, and don't push yourself through this process.
And I think if you have a dear person in your life, or a partner, or a friend, or who may have had some difficult things in their childhood, just be aware of how you hold space for that person. You don't have to say, oh, have you done your inner child work? You might want to just be cautious of seeing when they're going through a hard time of how can I hold space for them and help them through it.
The butterfly example that Dr. Clark gave us, I've used that with a lot of friends.
Yeah.
You know, that's
huge.
Listeners who might not have heard that interview, he said, imagine yourself as a butterfly on a wall of your childhood home, and imagine a younger person that you love dearly, like one of your children, in that home. And if you have any feeling of, oh, I don't want them in this house, or I want to protect them, then that means you have inner child work to do. And I have asked so many friends that, one friend was like, well, I don't know which home to picture because we move so much. And I was like, oh, ding, 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 we got a winner here. And another one was like, oh, I think I've really healed and worked on all of that. So I walked her through it. And she was like, oh my gosh, I can see the avocado refrigerator in our kitchen. And I was like, all right, now picture your youngest child. And she goes, oh, it's her first reaction. Like, she didn't want to say it, but she just went, ooh. And I was like, oh, we got some work to do there. And I think that's, you know, I'm being funny and playful about it, but I do think that's really, really important to just think about, would I want one of my children in that experience? And if the answer is no, then it's okay to recognize that there's some healing work to be done. If you're alive on this earth and breathing, it's because you have a purpose to share with this world, but it's also because you still have healing work to do. Like that client I was talking about who was still working on this in her 90s, and all of that is okay.
It is okay. It's why we're here. And again, it's that ripple effect of healing that's going to happen for other people, because you don't know if you start doing this work, who is it going to impact in your life? Maybe someone close to you, maybe your family, your children, your siblings, whatever, or maybe someone that just sees the work you're doing and saying, wow, I think that I need to take a look at this myself.
Big, big stuff. Well, we hope you've enjoyed this show. Anything else you want to add?
No, I guess I do. I just want to say, please be gentle with yourself and just be kind with yourself as you would with anyone else, because we all deserve that. We all deserve to be treated with love. And I think if you don't feel like you've always had that in your life, start with you, please.
That's a great, great reminder. Thank you, Denise. I love the way you put things into words.
Well, I'd love to take credit, but we know it's the dream team on the other side. But thank you.
Well, thank you, everyone, for listening. We hope you've enjoyed this two-part series on healing your inner child. If you have a question or a story you want to share with us, don't forget you can email us enlightenedempaths@gmail.com. And please check out our services on our websites, SamanthaFay.com and TheGratefulMessenger.com. Thanks so much for listening. Please remember, as always, to show up, do great work, and share your light.
Take care.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.